Thank you, Lou. Good morning, everybody. We've got a great panel this morning. Let me introduce in the order that they are on the slide. Dipto Chakravarti. Dipto, if you could come up. Dipto is the CTO at Artesia Technologies. They're a leading developer of digital asset management products. Prior to joining Artesia, Dipto founded the Teams division of Thomson Corporation, which Artesia purchased in 1999. And he's held a variety of engineering positions with IBM, Sun, AT&T, and Bell. And Paul Kennedy. Paul Kennedy is the director of advanced development at the Bulldog Group. He's Bulldog's resident expert in video and audio technologies and brings his previous experience working as a multimedia developer and as an audio engineer to the integration of new technologies and third-party applications with Bulldog software. And Pallavi Shah. Pallavi? Who is the Market Development Manager for Digital Media and Content Management at Sun Microsystems. Pallavi has been with Sun for the past 5 years. She chaired ISO's MPEG-4 Java Standards Group, and prior to Sun, she was with Sarnoff and was involved with the work of the Grand Alliance, with which many of us are familiar, in developing broadcast digital television. I've asked our three panelists not to do formal presentations this morning, but to give us a general overview of asset management and what it means to us both as a system and as individual stations. The word asset management, or the term asset management, has become so ubiquitous that virtually any device that stores anything is called an asset management system. And I expect if you go to the hotel gift shop and you buy a pad of paper, this will be called an asset management system. And the first question is, what do we mean when we talk about asset management systems? And Dipto has been brave enough to volunteer to at least begin that discussion. Or I'm brave enough to volunteer Dipto to begin that discussion. What is an asset management system? What are we talking about?
Let's just pick on the word asset first. Let's at least agree on that baseline, and I'll share share my views of the asset management with you. I see asset as anything that has value, and I'll say that all contents, analog or digital, are not necessarily assets, but all contents that have value in its isolated context is an asset. So if you look at it holistically, asset can be an image, text, video clip, audio clip, and a set of information about that content, which is data about the data, what we call is metadata. So if you take the content essence and the metadata together and logically tie it together, that package of information is called an asset. And an asset may have value in your business, which may be defined differently in some other line of business. So asset is anything that has value in its own isolated context. That could be a logo, that could be a paragraph, that could be a stock ticker symbol, that could be a keynote speech, that could be all of the above. And asset management is the act of tying it all together, and this is really has been seen in the last 25 years in two or three different variations. There are library indexing systems, library management systems, cataloging systems, and then the storage systems. They're all asset management systems of some sort or the other. The basic ones that are called the library information systems or really, if you think about it, if you walk into a library, you're going to see a card catalog. In the card catalog, you will get the reference to where that book is kept. You would go to the card catalog, find the card catalog, see the LOC, the Library of Congress code, QA76.12 or whatever the number is. Then you will walk over to the shelf and pull the book down. And that's the act of retrieving information that you want, and book being the asset. So it's also an asset management system, and that's been around since the beginning of time. Then you have a layer up from that that's just not cataloging, but it also indexes the content. And so it stores minimum information, like the addresses of where those contents are. And then you step up to another level, like a work group or departmental system, where it attempts to store part of the information and then points to the rest of the information. And you see products in all these three different areas in the market and across different horizontal industry sectors as well as vertical industry sectors. And both are right in their aspect of asset management. Some are logical asset management systems that are simply pointing or cataloging it. Some are physical asset management systems, as in the inventory management and pointing to the shelves where the movies reels are stored. And then the third level up is the digital asset management, which is where we'll be talking quite a bit about, and I'm going to leave that out and come back to it later.
Okay, so just recap the three layers that you identified.
So the cataloging systems, the directory systems, and the digital asset management, which are really storage and indexing systems. So you have three kinds, and at three levels across different industry sectors, and not just broadcast or entertainment, but library, information systems, inventory systems, CRM systems. It cuts across several sectors.
Thank you. Paul, one of my concerns is that as stations throughout public broadcasting, and there are roughly 175 separate licensees in the system, begin to develop and deploy asset management systems, it will be like separate public libraries, each of which has its own version of the Dewey Decimal System, and we won't be able to talk to each other. As Bruce Jacobs was saying the other day, actually it was yesterday, we now all have servers which don't talk to each other, and some stations even have two generations from the same company that won't talk to each other. I won't say who that is, but I'm very familiar with that situation. So the question for Paul is, are there standards that we can look to so that as we begin to roll out these asset management systems, we don't end up not being able to speak to each other? Paul.
Okay. There is a fair bit of work being done in the development of standards for the definition and classification of content, both out of MPEG and SMPTE and a whole bunch of others. The difficult thing is really reconciling the specialized or, you know, company-specific or, you know, production environment-specific metadata that a particular organization may need to capture or relate to their content, which really only relates to their organization. And having a system that's flexible enough to be able to model both, there are many different layers of metadata. There's some stuff that's purely operational. Is this an MPEG-1, MPEG-2? What's the bit rate? What's the resolution, PAL? You know, really low-level kind of stuff. There's some stuff that's some types of metadata that are higher level classification metadata. You know, it's a picture of a sailboat, you know, context, it was shot in New Zealand, whatever that may be. And there may be additional things like rights and royalties information and so on that also need to be tracked on the asset. So it's not a simple problem that we're facing. What I have seen some agreed upon standard, and I'll certainly open this up to the folks at the table here, is that the use of open standards such as XML to wrap and describe this metadata and provide defined schemas that are flexible enough to allow for this customized metadata and maybe have a certain number of agreed upon fields. XML is kind of an interesting technology that I've seen so far because it doesn't seem to offend anyone from Microsoft or IBM, or everybody seems to embrace it, so it's kind of a rarity, but it's also extremely powerful, and it has certainly been the core of a number of our integration efforts. And I don't think there's a vendor in asset management these days who aren't embracing XML as at least a wrapper format for the metadata.
So, Paul, as folks in this room go out on the floor this week and are seduced by a really sexy asset management system, what should we be looking out for to avoid so that we don't end up going down a dead-end street and not being able to come back out again?
Closed systems, you know, proprietary formats, really that to me is the dead end. It really locks you in with a particular way of classifying and representing your assets. You want as much open interfaces as you can get, as definable as possible. APIs, open APIs are certainly important. That's what I would look for.
Thanks. Pallavi, we think of Sun as being in the computer and storage business. How do we avoid buying systems that we're going to have to kiss goodbye in 5 years because they're obsolete? Having just said almost goodbye to beta cart machines, which aren't even fully depreciated, and with the rate of obsolescence accelerating all the time, I'm really concerned about investing in stuff which is going to be perishable as tomatoes and be dead, you know, within a couple of years of arrival. What should we be looking for in that area?
That's a very good point. I think that's why Paul made a very good point. You know, adhering to the standards is the first thing you have to do, and that's why our platform or any standard platforms you choose, which are not just optimized for one particular application, but they scale and expand for more applications, that's the first thing you have to watch for. So let's say maybe this particular system you bought did not work, but the same gear that you purchased can be used for other applications. So it's not, you know, waste of money. It's sort of a risk management issue. Adhering to the standards definitely would solve that problem to some extent.
And what's your guess about the trajectory of the cost of storage? It seems to be plummeting, absolutely, literally by the month.
Absolutely. And if you look at, I mean, also you have to look at the future, what is going to happen. You know, it's not just the broadcasting medium that's going to be the only medium through which the media is going to get distributed, but it's going to be multi-channel distribution. So there's internet distribution, there's wireless distribution. So you have to make sure that the platform and the asset management systems that you build are also going to extend for other kinds of distribution mechanisms, you know, and some of the viewers are going to watch the content not just on the TV, but also on their palms and on their cell phones and all kinds of devices. So how you have to make sure that the system is going to scale and expand for future distribution as well.
So Dipta, would you give us a little help here? We're going out on the floor. Most of the stations in this room, I dare say, don't have asset management systems as we would define them in the formal terminology that you suggested earlier. Where do we begin?
Yeah, just to teeing off from what Paul said earlier, which was right on, you ask the hard question first, is to, if you see an asset management vendor, ask what are the standards they have already complied to, not future, but present. Meaning, what are the standards they currently comply to, and get a sense for what those standards specifically mean to you. Because how I see it is, there are specific metadata attributes which are industry standard, like there are only so many things you can track about an MPEG-2 asset, and there are only so many things you can track about an XML asset. But then there are some business-specific metadata extensions that are specific to your business. And you should get the baseline support and be able to extend that to tailor it to your business. I mean, that's the key. Because what you don't want to do is walk into purchasing an asset management system that has all the right buzzword compliance, but you have to compromise in order to play with it. And don't lower the bar here, because if you lower the bar on ramp to this building an asset management system or acquiring an asset management system, that will become kind of like the limiting factor, the slowest link in the chain that you'll be building. So one of the first questions is, what are the standards that a vendor complies to, and how can you extend it to tailor it to your business specific needs? And the third piece, which is not as obvious, is how are the hierarchical schemes? I mean, how do you organize assets? Like here, you know, a vendor like General Motors have like year, make, model, two-door, four-door, that's their hierarchy. In a geographic sense, you may have North America, states, cities, city blocks. And in your business, there are, again, movies, scenes, clips, keyframes, you know, there's a well-understood hierarchy. And I submit to you that hierarchy may look the same, but is not the same across all the broadcast stations here. So you want a hierarchical scheme that you can extend and adopt to and map to. And that's called the classification hierarchy or taxonomy hierarchy. Is there any other terms, Paul or Pallavi, that you can think of? I mean, really, those are the two key terms. That how do you organize? How does the taxonomy of your assets, physical or logical, encoded or analog, how do those things map? And how can you extend it?
So does every station end up having a group of catalogers sitting there watching every piece of content which is created and entering it into a database?
You shouldn't have to encode every bit of the content. Some of this should be automated. And if you're going to encode content on demand, depending on which are the assets that are more frequently asked for, or which you want to encode upfront into multiple formats, you'll be mapping it to the same hierarchy. So that should become, it should become a fairly generic practice to be able to ask what such and such broadcast station has. But even if the tree doesn't map, you can still go up or down the hierarchy to find what you need.
Now, let me ask Paul this. There's all of this being talked about speech-to-text systems, image recognition, using closed captioning as a handle on content, using text on screen as a handle. Is this close to being fully automated, Paul? Where are we in that state of the art?
Well, certainly there's some very interesting and compelling tools out there that do things, much as you said, speech-to-text, on-screen, optical character recognition, speaker identification, face recognition, and so on. And depending on the nature of your content, these can be very effective tools. However, also depending on the nature of your content, they can be completely useless tools, which may sound like a harsh statement, but what it means that is if you have content that's, say, pre-produced, there's closed caption text, by all means, if you have the means to capture that closed caption text information, index it, and make it searchable, that's an extremely powerful capability. However, if you're dealing with raw source footage, pre-production kind of footage, it probably isn't going to have closed caption text, so that feature isn't going to do you a lot of good. Similarly, if you're dealing with talking heads kind of footage, then face recognition and speaker ID, that stuff works very well, and even the speech-to-text in a kind of scenario where you have one person talking at a time and it's relatively controlled noise levels, you can get some pretty good success rates with those tools. If you're dealing with field footage and, a very heterogeneous kind of content, maybe it's nature footage, these tools aren't going to do you a lot of good. And there are some times when you just can't beat a really good librarian or archivist who knows what the content is about, what the semantics around it are, the circumstances to really classify and identify that content. So depending on your content, these tools could be perfectly applicable, or they might unfortunately just not work for your application. Now, there's one functionality that a lot of them do provide, though. If I look at, say, the Virages of this world, I don't know if everybody has seen them, but they're a good example of a tool in this industry space. And that is the ability to take a large segment of video and break it up into multiple logical chunks. So regardless of what metadata or automated login tools you're using, this fundamental ability to be able to say, from this point in time to this point in time, here's a bunch of useful information that describes what happened there. That is, I think, a fundamental capability that you have to have.
And how are we doing on these, what I call bloodhound features, where you show them a picture of somebody and say, go find this person?
Well, most of the ones that have had the best success so far, if I go back to the speech-to-text or the speaker recognition and so on, what the tool produces is textual metadata. So we're still dealing with fundamentally standard, well-understood text searching capabilities. So what they're doing is it's performing the analysis and rendering time-based textual metadata, which is then used for indexing and classification. The point in time in which we're dealing with more dynamic, feature vector-based, more in terms of media, it takes a lot of computing power, it can take a fair bit of time. And at this point in time, I see that kind of technology still being a bit in a niche marketplace. It's hard to come up with a really definable ROI on some of these, more advanced ways of searching through content. The textual metadata, even if gathered by an automated tool, still tends to be most applicable to most of our customers, at any rate.
Pallavi, we were talking earlier about the extent to which public broadcasters are becoming platform agnostic. What are the particular concerns from an asset management perspective as we look at an increasing number of platforms over which we'll be delivering content?
Rights management, definitely.
Stay there a moment.
Sorry,
that tends
management.
To be the most vexingly difficult issue we are finding, along with all of these other technical issues. What's the state of rights management these days?
There are, quite a few companies, I think, because I do market development, my primary job is to identify strategic partners for Sun in this area. And I think I meet one new company a week, which claims that they've got the perfect solution for rights management.
And 500 of them are here at NAB, I think. Yeah.
And then we meet the broadcasters and customers, and they say they have been searching for past 2 years, and they haven't found one company or even a combination of companies who have the full solution.
Why is this so difficult?
Lack of standards is definitely one, because, and of course the broadcasters as well as the content producers are also looking only at the traditional business model of making money. You know? I produce the content, I should get paid for it. They don't look at the alternate possibilities, such as identifying who the customers are and finding out their needs and, targeted advertisement kind of applications and things like that. So there's a, there are companies who say we've got this nice solution and that gives you more information about the customers and such. Broadcasters and Disney's of the world, they don't like that solution. Number two, there's a lot of research happened in this space. Companies like Intertrust, for example. Good technology, but when you think about the implementation, it's like writing, you would just say, I'll write the code instead, instead of buying this software, because it's very tedious to implement. Then you have some companies who provide this clearinghouse kind of capabilities, but the issues are, why do we go outside? We want it in-house. So, and plus, tracking the whole usage all the way back, it's very difficult. Peer-to-peer is becoming very complex for this space, especially. So those are some of the issues.
Dipto wanted to get a comment in here.
Yeah, couple of thoughts there. If you're walking up, if you have a need for a rights management system, again, if you're going to be meeting with these vendors on the floor, the 500 of them that Ralph pointed out,
David.
Try to, again, ask the most basic question first about where do they fit in this ecosystem of digital rights management? Because there are four, like Pallavi pointed out, there's three or four key areas. It starts with assigning the rights. Stage two is the contracts that you track. Stage three is enforcement, which is where encryption, watermarking, and all those things come in. And the fourth stage is the clearinghouse, which is where you're clearing the rights. That's where the antitrust and the reciprocals and the magics of the world come out. So really, of those four quadrants, you need to know who's playing where and what are the heavy lifting, what are the fundamental problems they're solving in that particular area. Because digital rights is like asset management. If you don't get the vocabulary straight, and it'll be all over the place, because you need control of your digital assets before you can enforce and track the rights to it. And they're pretty closely tied together, in fact, so tied together that one, you cannot really make a decision, especially a buying decision on one, without considering the other.
Pallavi, I interrupted you when I first asked you about the implications for multiple platform distribution, and then we got off on the rights management issue. What are the implications for multi-platform distribution?
That is one. Then how do you repurpose the content on fly for all kinds of distribution mechanisms, like wireless or internet, and the requirements for the devices and how the content should look like on these different devices.
Well, that is
a complex
Let's thing. Expand on that, because we have spoken in this forum about COPE, Create Once, Play Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Are you suggesting that although I think that's still an ideal to be attained and not a reality, that could be incorporated into an asset management system?
It can be, but I haven't seen anything that good yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still in theory.
Let me show you.
Because it's not just the product features, but it's really the way the distribution models are changing. How do you... It's also all the proxies and caching, and not only on the internet but on the wireless front. How do you make sure that the content is repurposed correctly? For the internet example, let's say you have some a site somewhere in Africa or somewhere, which is just 56K connections. Why would you want to cache everything that is MPEG-2, for example, for that kind of an audience? That's not going to work. So how do you do this on fly and make sure that you optimize your bandwidth and resources? That's a very difficult issue.
Paul?
Yeah, I was just going to add, one of the, I think the important thing is, I mean, obviously everybody's talking about multi-channel distribution, get your stuff out on the web and so on, but I think one of the most important principles or concepts is that the web production process should not be done, it shouldn't be like a separate additional parallel production process that you have to maintain. If possible, and I think actually it's a necessity, that you want to try to leverage your existing production process as much as possible. Because, I mean, that stuff we all understand, you know, whereas getting into the web publishing space is like a whole new delivery mechanism that may be beyond, you know, your traditional focus. So using tools like, you know, automatic content transcoding and really using, or, you know, being able to share some of the, say, the editorial metadata and information that was captured, created during the whole process. There are ways to really integrate the web or whatever your sort of alternate or secondary distribution mechanisms, leverage that from your core production process. And because I've seen this over and over in different broadcasts and so on, that they have their one traditional television production process, and then they have a whole other team doing a completely parallel, starting with the same raw tape footage, doing edits, doing really just duplicating work and effort. And they'll do that if they have a couple of web channels, they'll be doing this, you know, 3-4 groups, all doing the same stuff, the same content, just for slightly different purposes. And I don't know how anyone can justify or maintain those expenses.
Well, one of our panelists yesterday afternoon observed that the folks on the web side rarely talk to the people on the production side. Do any of the three of you practice organizational family therapy? Because the human factors side of implementing asset management systems and the impact on workflow and relationships are among the most profound issues, even after you address all of the technical issues involved. And what's your experience been on that front, Dipto?
You said the magic word. What happens when you get this new asset management system in-house? What's the first thing that's going to do? It's going to break your staff's workflow, and it really rips through the guts of the workflow that they
know. That's pleasant.
it fundamentally changes, unless you have this as a one-off, like a sidebar, which I don't think too many of you will. If it's the core of the business, it's going to change the workflow, and really that is the growing pain. If you can mitigate those risks up front through some ROIs that you can convince these people so that they don't feel like fish out of water, is to look, this is going to change the workflow. But at the end game is going to be better than what it used to be. Things won't drop at the cutting room floor. Things are not going to get left out of being tracked or managed. And to the earlier point Ralph made was, this race to the web was only a panacea about getting the storefronts going, and asset management is much further upstream from the web. Web is happens to be one of those five delivery channels. And if you come upstream, you're going to see that if you have the right transformers and the transcoders in place, whether it's the web delivery, CD or DVD press, print, wireless, it requires the same bag of tricks. And you should be able to get these four channels out with a push button without really changing much. And then what you're doing at further downstream is you're simply making those things fit better into the visual devices, such as making some style sheets and, you know, making the web pages look prettier, or you're putting some WML wrappers around the wireless devices, which might be able to render your goods better. But it's really, I call that prettification or rendering. Upstream, the battle is in the asset management is upstream from that, and that's where the workflow is impacted more than anything else.
Paul, have you experienced organizations which have gracefully ripped the guts out of their workflow processes?
Well, actually, I mean, this is a sort of a key challenge that I think any digital asset management implementation faces. And certainly, I mean, the climate, I mean, you're sort of talking about family counseling. It can very much be that. If you look at NAB last year...
Yeah, putting people aside, these are not problems.
Yeah, so... But, you know, last year, NAB, the new media divisions of all the broadcasters and entertainment companies, they were the favorite sons, they had all the budget, they had the money, they were the ones purchasing digital asset management, or at least kicking the tires. And a lot of those groups don't exist anymore. And what became very apparent is really that it all comes back to, or the reason for implementing DAM is to address your primary business process, which is, in the case, I assume, of all the folks here in the room, is getting picture to air, making, you know, television programming. And if it doesn't address that, then, you know, it's at best secondary, which means it's the first thing that gets cut. So it has to address that. But I think, it can certainly be a complete, well, hopefully not a complete change, but it can have some effect on the overall workflow or process. But you want to try to make sure that it is as gentle as possible, the rollout of digital asset management within the organization. And what this means is, choosing or selecting a definable project with measurable goals to implement. I usually do a rollout, a phased approach to staging out digital asset management, so that it's, understood by all what the goals are of the project and that can be measured. And what, the thing that's going to sink a project most is if the users, the editorial assistants or the editors or whoever they are, fundamentally don't like the tools. If they don't like the program, you're going to kill your project. So you need to try to enforce, or try to not enforce, try to, slip of the tongue. You want to try to get as much user buy-in as possible. Really try to foster and nurture that. So bring your users in right at the very beginning part of the process as you define how they go about their business and make sure we fundamentally understand what the workflow is and the production processes. And the other thing I'd say is that, and this comes down to an integration play, which goes back to open standards, is that if a user has to play with, one tool for doing one thing, okay, so I'm going to get something out of the DAM, now I go over to this EDL creation, now I go over here to this nonlinear edit system, now I go over here to, to a traffic system. If there are too many tools, too many interfaces, the system just becomes more cumbersome than it's really worth it. I'm better with my old clipboard, notepad, sheet of paper, I got my tape in hand, and I can cut video with that real quick. So integration with all the different production systems, and it's a seamless integration, I think, is really what's going to make any kind of digital asset management deployment succeed.
Good. Two more questions, then we'll open it up for Q&A. Pallavi, every one of us in this room, if we're responsible for implementing these kinds of systems, has to make the case to the folks who control the budget in the organization. Where do you begin to quantify why this is a worthwhile investment?
Digitization, right? Everything is going to be digital, so you have to go digital and you have to have processes that help you do that. So first thing you would say is you have to, what Paul said was so right. You have to, if you can convince that using this automated system is going to actually improve the workflow and it's going to integrate more departments together and get you the content, same content to multiple channels in less cost than what it is right now. And if it is opening new business and revenue models for you, then that is definitely a very...
Is they generated?
Can I talk about WGBH?
Sure. I'm all ears.
So the press release is going to be out, right? That's one, I think, of the recent one where WGBH implemented Artesia using Sun Storage. That could be one case study I can point to. The whole content was taken, all kinds of contents integrated together for various distribution mechanisms then.
Yeah, and to be fair, the jury is out on the return on investment at this point. So that what I'm asking is for all of us who are going to our chief financial offices or others who control the budgets, as we will continue to do, what's the evidence that this is worth the expense? Are there case studies around that that document that?
A few. I think there are some, CNN has published a few.
CNN.
Artesia and Bulldog both have quite a few. At least, I don't know how many I can talk about because a lot of press releases are supposed to be out in a week.
But your advice would be that as we speak to vendors, we should ask for references and case studies.
Very important.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The last question, then we'll open up for Q&A. Dipto, I don't think it's coincidence that the session before this one was about optical networking, and the session following this one is about storage area networks. Where does asset management fit into that larger field?
I see asset management, Ralph. Asset management, we call this the damn business, the digital asset management business. It's really at the heart of, it's the gap between the source and the destination, because in the session before us, we spoke about bandwidth. We spoke about ubiquitous bandwidth so that multiple apps can have the ability to access content right from the source instantly. And in the session following this, we are going to talk about that source itself, the whole storage subsystem, a ubiquitous storage subsystem, where there's really a disk farm out there. You don't need to know where your content is coming from, and you don't need to know how the best-of-breed storages below the surface are storing these assets. How are we partitioning streaming video versus streaming audio versus 800 megabyte brain scan, TIFF images, let's say if some pharmaceuticals use that. You don't need to know where it's stored and how it's stored. The point is, it should be a click away from you. And the gap between the source and the access point is where the damn component fits in. Asset management, digital asset management, I see these as the drivers that access these devices, these disk farms out there, in a manner that it gives you the instant gratification that, yes, my content is out there. I may be looking at a low-res proxy of it, but my content is out there. It's only two clicks away. If I need a high-res version of it, I can get it by clicking two more. So this whole studio experience that you are one or two clicks away from the source, from the assets, from the digital assets, your most valuable thing. And I fundamentally see the digital asset management being the core between the source and the target.
Thank you. Open it up for questions.
Dave Horowitz, consultant. I've been listening to this, and the impression I have, which really started last year, is that this is an evolving, relatively new technology, and I think it's maybe early in the cycle, especially with consideration given to the cost that all these stations are incurring in switching over to digital television. And I was wondering, while this technology is settling down and reaching some type of a standard, is there some type of interim solution that stations could be adopting to worry about asset management in the present in a little reduced manner, but then later adapt that into a newer system, such as these companies are producing? In other words, developing a database using Access or some other simple program where they could enter the key information about each particular asset, and this information wouldn't go to waste when they finally do buy a system, but for now it would serve the purpose of getting them by, and perhaps even adapt some system-wide standard between the public stations and PBS to develop this that type of database.
Paul, you want to take that?
I'll start giving that one a kick. One of the first things I'd sort of mention is that I think digital asset management, or asset management, let's leave out the digital for a moment. Obviously, because I represent a tools vendor, I'm going to say the tools are very prominently involved, or can be in that overall space. But asset management itself can be a practice as well. So whether you're in a position to purchase a leading system like a Bulldog, like an Artesia or whatever, or whether you're not quite there yet, certainly going through the process of examining or analyzing your content, starting to define how it should be represented and what the relationships are between the content, and start doing that preparation work even long in advance of a purchase, I think is certainly well worth it, because these are the, in fact, the longest process usually in a rollout when we do projects with customers is going through the on-site analysis of trying to, you know, look at the whole body of content that we need to store in the system and define how it needs to be organized, how it needs to be classified. Because for some organizations, it really is a completely new process to get used to. Because everything has been, I've got my tape, I've got my shot list of, you know, from field notes, and I'm going to go straight to the edit bay. So it can be a fundamental change in the way they view their processes. So, yeah, there can be something of a phased-out approach. However, given, you know, a move to full digital broadcasting and so on, now is a pretty good opportunity to also try to address some of the digital asset management aspects of the problem. One, because many broadcasters are going from pumping out one channel to now, you know, four channels, five channels, whatever. But also, since everything's digital, we're going through a digitization process anyway, and we're starting to create and classify, you know, create these assets. So it's a pretty opportune moment to introduce the layer that classifies them, organizes them. Even if you don't keep that digital content around, you know, maybe the DigiBeta tape goes back on a shelf. Still maintaining that metadata in perpetuity, and at least knowing now that I can search on it textually, find the content and point to a table on the shelf, I think is still a very valuable tool to have.
We're just about end of time. Are there additional questions, comments? Right here.
How you doing? As an IT manager listening to this, I get nightmares based on the requirements from the IT side. When you talk about your network infrastructure that's in the building to allow for someone upstairs to see this streaming video, Susie in creative marketing deleted this video file. We've got this virus that has taken out all these video images. You know, security, a hacker just got into your system through, there was no firewall. You know, all these issues backing up all of this so that if there's a catastrophic failure, we can bring the business back. The nightmare to the IT side is overwhelming. Anybody want to address
that? So the question is, what's the what are the security issues?
It's more of a plea for when you build these systems and put them on paper and management looks at it and says, great, let's go buy it, you know, also take into consideration those type of issues within the stations as to how does it fit into your current model from an IT network infrastructure, data management sort of environment.
Dipto, last word.
Good question. We get asked that question. We get asked that question more frequently. It's probably the most frequently asked questions. My two cents would be, we should have sweated those details up front about what happens when a user deletes an asset, what happens, how do you back up these huge forest of information here. And those are things that an asset management product, a digital asset management product, should have sweated up front. So it'll be a training issue for the IT staff of a site as to how do you mitigate those risks. Some of the heavy liftings of what happens, should we even let you delete assets? How do we migrate assets? How do we age assets out of the hierarchical storage management systems? Those are the heavy liftings like that vendors like Artesia and Bulldog should have already sweated for you. And what you are there to get the answers to those questions, not to discover, not to go through these growing pains of what happens when things fall on the floor or somebody pulls a plug.
Dipto, Paul, Pallavi, thank you very much.